Hey Gems, welcome back to the show. Let's not waste any time and jump straight into the topic. Welcome to the show. So excited to have Mandy here to talk about how to make more money. You know, I love that this topic, it's one of my favorite things to discuss. And Mandy, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Jacen. It's an honor to be on your podcast. For those who don't know me, my name is Mandy Woodruff Santos. I'm a little croaky right now because, you know, tripledemic is a real thing out there. Y'all wear the damn masks, okay? Just wear them. But yeah, we're doing well. I'm based in New York City, and I am a career coach. I recently started my practice a couple of years ago, and I founded a group coaching community specifically for women of color called Mandy Moneymakers. And I help professional badasses really earn their worth and create a more resilient career. And through my own career, I actually started out in journalism and then I pivoted into marketing. And I, you know, grew from an individual reporter to, you know, managing a team of 30 and on track to become a vice president and all the things. So I really lived that corporate life. And I co-founded a podcast called Brown Ambition in 2015 with my co-host, Tiffany, the Budgetnista. And so Tiff was always entrepreneur girly and I was always 9-to-5 girly. So we had those different perspectives and it's been a really fun adventure. So now, yeah, I get to talk to women every day, which is, as someone in corporate America, I was not able to interface with many women of color on a daily basis. So I feel spoiled rotten now because every day I get to talk to someone like Jacen and it's like, oh, this is what life should be like on the reg.
Yeah. I love it. So you've had just, it sounds like a really wide range of experiences coming from some different industries and now being able to really focus on helping women. You said Mandy Moneymakers. That sounds really fun to be a part of your community. Everyone wants to be a moneymaker, right? Mm-hmm. But for you, how is it that you navigated, you know, being in spaces where you didn't see a lot of women like you and having to like hold your own and going up against, you know, just maybe like the stigmas or the environment in and of itself, maybe not being one that was conducive to women thriving and being successful by nature.
I mean, well, there's nothing like growing up in Georgia and going to a huge state school where minority students make up like 7% of the population to really get you used to being one of few and not one of many. So honestly, I look back on my college experience as it was pretty much how the world looked after I graduated, unfortunately, especially in journalism. It was so heavily, overwhelmingly white women, especially in PR and advertising, and white men were my professors. And I did have one black female professor, shout out to Valerie Boyd, may she rest in peace. And I was prepared for that. Now, it doesn't mean that I didn't feel like an outcast. And I definitely, early in my career, I always felt like there was something like wrong with me. Like, why couldn't I just talk as loud as the other guys in the office? I used to work at this like digital news startup called Business Insider, and it was very male dominated. And I can look back now and be like, oh, honey, that place was not, they were never going to value your voice above the others, you know? But at the time, I just felt like, put your head down and do good work. And fortunately, early in my career, I had an experience where I was let go. I was laid off from like my first big girl job in New York. And that really gave me a wake up call in the sense that, oh, they can just fire me any old time they see fit. So if I get a new job opportunity, I'm not going to feel guilty about leaving. And so that really helped counteract any sort of like imposter syndrome or like natural emotions that you have being a one of few in a very like male and pale kind of space. It helped counteract that by at least being courageous enough to walk away for new opportunities. And that's sort of how I overcame that particular obstacle of being, you know, one of few.
So you had some training in college because you're already in an environment that was similar to what corporate America looked like. And I used to be a therapist. I'm still a therapist. I just don't see clients anymore. But one of the continuous things because I used to work with a lot of women, and even more specifically women of color, that would come up was women in the workplace and it being sometimes like borderline toxic or hostile or just difficult for them to navigate because they didn't feel like they fit in the space, or the things that they experienced, things that people said and whatnot were not conducive to their ability to thrive. And so, and I think that it's also to some extent that on top of not feeling like you're getting paid, you know, like what's appropriate for what you're doing. I think that that's like the cherry on top, right? So I think it's almost like, you know what, I can manage to deal and navigate corporate America if I feel like it's worthwhile. And I think that because women don't feel like they're being paid, you know, appropriately or compensated enough for what they're doing, that then it's like, I'm not getting paid enough to deal with your BS. Like what's going on here? So as you were beginning to climb the ranks, because you said that you kind of started to navigate going from working maybe solo or individually, managing a team, up for maybe vice president. As you were beginning to climb up through the ranks, how is it that you personally navigated those conversations around compensation as you, you know, were moving up?
Yeah, I mean, I was really good at quitting. So part of my career strategy and my wealth building strategy was strategically walking away. And every time you walked away from a job, you had a new opportunity to negotiate. And I think so many women end up underpaid, not because they don't negotiate, but because they don't really have a chance to, because they stay loyal to a single employer for longer than is probably necessary. So for me, again, it goes back to being laid off early in my career. And then not only that, but I was a journalist covering finance. I was covering the studies and the research that said women of color earn 70 cents to the dollar. Women of color don't negotiate. Women of color are undervalued. Millennials are screwed because of the recession. It's going to take millennials 20 years to catch up to where their boomer parents were at their same age. Like, all these facts were spinning in my head, and it really helped equip me with, oh, damn, if I don't make some strategic moves, this is where I'm heading. And so I was like, what can I control? I can't really control the economy. I can't control unconscious bias. I can't control racism, sexism, all that. What I can control is how long I'm willing to stay someplace when there may be juicier opportunities out there. So for me, so quitting was the first secret weapon. And then I wasn't always a master negotiator, but I tried. I opened my mouth and I asked. And I heard no the first couple of times. But then the better I got at showing my value and making an employer excited to hire me, the easier negotiating got, because it wasn't like I was fighting for my value. My value was already so apparent that by the time I got to the negotiation, you know, the official negotiating table, it really was never a table, it was like a phone call, that it wasn't as much of a fight at that point. And so for me, it became less about putting all the pressure on that negotiation conversation. And I approached my career instead like, how can I stand out among my peers in such a way that I'm going to attract attention from competitors? They're going to try to poach me because they see how fabulous I am. And then they're already excited about me. And then when I come and I'm like, oh, you got to pay me, you know, 30% more, they are already excited about me, and it's going to be less of a battle. So that's a lot of what I work with women in my community, is not so much the individual negotiating story conversation, but how are you creating a professional brand that's so strong that you're attracting the best, most lucrative job opportunities to yourself?
Y'all, if you haven't been taking notes already, these gems, oh my goodness, it makes me almost want to go get a 9-to-5 just to see what I can do.
Just to see what you can do. Yeah, you're doing all
just
right.
Just to see what I can ask for. You said some really significant things, and I want to kind of touch on them, you know, one at a time. The first thing that you said that I don't think I literally have ever heard anyone say was, I'm really good at quitting. And I think that that's just not a phrase. Yes, brag. Like that's not a phrase that I think that we hear and that we actually allow ourselves to use as a strength, because we think quitting is bad. We have a negative connotation to quitting and having the desire to quit, right? And that somehow it means something about us. But you're talking about strategically leaving when a position no longer serves you in order to be able to leverage the skills and abilities that you have to go and serve somewhere else or wherever is, you know, because sometimes when you say you're going to leave, people are like, wait, you're going to leave? Like, what can we do? And so I think that, you know, that in and of itself is a power move. And then the two things that I want us to talk about is one, you said you learned how to show your value. And then two, it was making an employer excited. And I think those are the two things that a lot of women are still in the process of learning how to do because, like you just mentioned, the negotiation or the conversation or the emails back and forth or whatever the case may be are just one piece of an entire puzzle that is how to make more money. And I think that when we understand it's more than just asking for, you know, salary increase or whatever the case may be, it's actually what are you doing strategically to place yourself in a position to have that conversation go, you know, more in your direction than not. And so that first thing, when it comes to showing value, what does that look like for someone to show their value in their work so that
Well,
someone so they can communicate it?
yeah, absolutely. And so I'm speaking to women directly right now. You can do good work, but the good work may not be being seen. So what I work with women on is how are you showing off your excellent work? It's not enough to just be excellent at what you do, right? I think it's important to then be able to show that and share that outside of your company and also internally as well. And that's important too, because building up your fan base within your company, you don't know where those people are going to end up, you know? So if you're someone who wants to put your head down and just get your work done and not really be noticed, you could be shooting yourself in the foot. So what are some ways that you can start getting noticed? So I talk a lot about the power of intrapreneurship. So being entrepreneurial is when you're in a 9 to 5, but you're coming up with interesting new ideas and ways to execute those ideas to help meet business goals. And that can look a bunch of different ways, you know, depending on what field you're in. For me as a reporter, it maybe was me creating an investigative, you know, series, you know, that I would pursue that could potentially win me awards in at my company. When I got into marketing, it was creating a bespoke publishing process, like coming up with a publishing process to improve upon what we already had. I would find ways to make my mark, you know, coming up with the new ideas and presenting them and then seeing them through. Another way to be entrepreneurial is to look for opportunities to learn from other colleagues and look for ways to, you know, people want to, everyone's always pivoting. I think career pivoting is just a natural part of our journeys. But what about the power of pivoting in place? So who can you be learning from for free, quote unquote, like at your company right now and start building up some skills? Not only is that going to get you, like, put you in front of other people at the company and again, expand your brand because other people are going to know you, but it's also going to help you become more valuable because you're learning new tricks of the trade, right? So these are ways you can put yourself out there. I'm a big fan of pitching yourself for conference opportunities to speak or be on panels. You can pitch your own ideas. You can pitch yourself to run a workshop on something you're really passionate about at your job or to debrief your team on a recent project that you can just completed. Like, I want to share some key learnings. There's ways you can be entrepreneurial and get that attention and stand out from the crowd. Now, that's your internal brand at your company. That's important because, again, that's how you get the promotions, the raises, and you never know where your people will wind up down the line. They may poach you someday. But externally also matters too. So, what's your presence like on LinkedIn? Do not put LinkedIn in the bucket of like, oh, social media is the devil, blah, blah, blah. LinkedIn is bae. LinkedIn is bae. I would not have 10x'd my salary from 30K to 300K if I had not been on LinkedIn. There's no way. Because LinkedIn is how they found me. You have to be findable. You have to make it so easy for people to see you, and you have to make it easy for them to poach you. So share your good work on LinkedIn, connect with people on LinkedIn, you know, actually talk about your work and promote it. And not from a place of, I know people are like, oh, that's bragging or whatnot. But if you really love what you're doing, you're just sharing with the world a bit of what you love. And ultimately, people like to interact with people who are interested in what they're doing. I don't know. It's why I follow this random TikToker and all he talks about is the deadliest animals. And I don't really care about chimpanzees or like killer whales. But like he's so passionate about it. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna tune into this guy. It's engaging, you know? So I'll stop there. But that's where you can start to think about shining and sparkling. You want to be the bright, shiny thing that people notice. in order to get the juiciest opportunities. And when they notice you, they're going to be excited about you, right? So you start that negotiation before you've even sat down and had the conversation.
Oh, y'all, this is real good. Okay. So then there's your internal brand and then there's your external brand, right? Because like you said, you don't know where people are going to end up if someone leaves a job and ends up poaching you because they worked with you on the same team. That happens so regularly. And then there's, how are you showing off how you're doing or what you're doing in your job on LinkedIn, which is its own universe, right? Not like the other social media places. And what's really coming to mind is another thing that I know a lot of ladies that I've talked to struggle with is this idea of like owning their genius or owning their abilities and their capabilities. And this kind of, oh gosh, I don't know how to describe this relationship with humility that's working against them, essentially, right? Like growing up, it's like you need to be humble. You need to learn how to be humble and modest. And so I think as women, we're kind of conditioned to be that way. And but then it's like you said, shooting yourself in the foot because if you're not singing your own praises, if you're not celebrating your own wins, if you're not sharing how you are helping organizations literally hit their objectives and make more money or save money or have an impact, then you're not acknowledging, the contribution you're making to a place. Is that something that you see with your students? Like that they have this, gosh, maybe I don't know if it's about confidence, but like a struggle with like sharing and showing that they're good at what they do and owning it with power.
I think there's this perception that if you just do good work, eventually it'll pay off. Like someone will tap you on the shoulder and be like, "You, Mandy, I notice you, and you've been amazing. Here's all this money and a promotion." That ain't how it happens typically. There are some managers, I count myself among them, who were really passionate about developing talent and wanting people to, push themselves and identify people who should be valued more and push for raises and stuff. But not a lot of managers are like that. And certainly when you're a woman of color, you're even less likely to be tapped on the shoulder or seen as, a star player. That's why it's so important to learn how to amplify your own work and to shine regardless of who's noticing you. Like, make it impossible for them to dismiss you by showing off your own work and illustrating your own impact. You can't wait for someone to tap you on the shoulder and give you everything. We have to, as women of color, go out there and claim it for ourselves. And I was just talking about this earlier too, because there's all this talk about, like, in New York now, there's a salary transparency law where companies have to post a salary with job listings. And people were like, "Oh, this is great. Legislation is coming and maybe it'll be federal soon." And I'm like, "But we can't afford to wait for that. As women of color, we have so much ground to make up for just because we start out from behind that you can't really wait for someone else to solve the problem. Think about what you can control again." So for me, it was quitting and giving myself opportunities to negotiate for more. But it was also learning that I needed to be able to sell myself and tell my own story, to attract those new opportunities.
It's so important, I think, to, like you said, learn how to advocate for yourself, sell yourself, speak about yourself in a positive light. And when you do that, you're teaching people, you're conditioning them essentially to think of you in the way that you've talked about yourself. And so I think that's something that a lot of us forget is that we have influence over how people perceive us and the way that we speak about ourselves can shift and change what that looks like. And what you're talking about really kind of highlights that for me. And so I want to hear about some of these Mandy moneymakers because I'm sure you have some really fun success stories. What has it looked like for some of your students to have made an employer excited that led to them having, like a great opportunity, whether it was a pay increase or, a new position. I'd love to hear maybe some of the stories that you've been able to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, I can just think about it. I got a DM from one of my Mandy moneymakers named Dana. And I know I talk a lot about quitting and obviously the great opportunity you have to negotiate when you quit. But Dana was in a situation where she works for a big public utility, and she has been sort of like a best kept secret, just like a workhorse for years and years and years. And recently they like gave her a 6 month rotation into a management role, but they didn't give her a raise. And 6 months became 9 months, became 12. Next thing you know, it's 18 months. She's been doing this job, managing a team of five or seven people, and still hasn't gotten a raise. And so she came to me in October and she just gave me an update. She was asking, like, okay, they finally told me that I'm going to get an official job offer. They're going to post the job and I'm going to like interview for it. I'm just like the audacity that she had to still interview for the damn job she'd been doing for 18 months. But anyway, so I was like, and she was feeling timid about wanting to ask for more. And I was like, no, like you haven't gotten a raise. You're doing so much more work. And they lowballed her. So they came to her with an offer of $130,000. She was making 113. I just did the math. I'm not this good at math to be able to pull this out of my mind. I just did it earlier because I was trying to calculate 15% raise, basically 15% raise, and no retroactive, oh, you've been doing this for 18 months, so here's a bonus, you know? So she pushed back and she was really proud of herself. She's like, I asked for, and I coached her on the fact that don't be afraid to ask for more because they need you. You've been doing this job for 18 months. They don't have anyone in their back pocket who can do the job better than you. Not only have you been doing the job for 18 months, but show them, like, bring some data, bring an overview of the impact that you've had. And her team specifically works on budgets and things like that. So show some reports, show some numbers of how you have had a solid impact on budget projections and, you know, for the past 18 months. So she did that, and she pushed back and she was like, based on this impact that I've had and her own research of salaries of her level and in the similar area, she pushed back and asked for 30% more than what they had offered her. And she ended up walking away with 20% more. So she got from 15 to 20% more. Plus she got, I forget the total amount, but like several thousand dollars of a bonus, like a cash bonus to kind of, it definitely didn't compensate for 18 months of, you know, her doing the most for not that much pay, but something, you know, and she was so happy and excited. And that's really what it comes down to. It's like helping women push through that doubt of should I ask for more? And the reality is that it's always going to be uncomfortable. Like it's always going to be awkward. It's not supposed to be easy to ask people for money, you know? So for me, it's just about acknowledging that it's going to be uncomfortable and just doing the thing anyway. So I'm really proud of Dana for pushing forward and negotiating like that. What else can I think of? I mean, there's so many examples of, oh, another maker. Her name is Ray, and she's based in Carolina, North Carolina. Ray used to work for a big retailer like Walmart, and she was I'm trying not to give too much away, but she was like a recruitment specialist. Like she'd work with the recruiting team, and she was making like $18 an hour, something really low. Plus, she was trying to get her MBA, and she was doing a bunch of stuff, and she wanted to break into like recruiting, like you know, talent acquisition. And it was one of those situations where for her it felt like a big pivot, like, oh, this is so much different than what I'm doing. But I was like, there's ways for you to put on your LinkedIn profile the right keywords to attract talent acquisition opportunities to you. No, you don't work in talent acquisition right now, but you support those teams and you've shadowed some of them. So let's demonstrate some of that on your profile. And sure enough, she started to get an increase in outreach from recruiters because recruiters are using LinkedIn like Google. You just need to make sure that you're showing up for what the roles that they're searching for, you know? So it took Ray a few months. Yes, it wasn't an easy transition, but she ended up getting a job that nearly doubled her salary from like 50 to 90K, and she pivoted into talent acquisition. And then, Jacent, she got laid off 3 months later. It was like me all over again. I know, but it's not a sad story because she's a Mandy moneymaker. It doesn't matter if you get laid off. Shit can happen at any time. She's a Mandy freaking moneymaker. So what happened was Ray got let go 3 months later there, and it wasn't anything. She couldn't have predicted it. They got acquired. It was new management. You know, that happens, you know, but she was prepared. She had a much stronger profile, and she had a strong network. And within a couple of months, she had another job and she didn't have to go backward. She's making even more than 90K now. She's over the six-figure mark, right? So this is the power of creating a strong professional brand. And because she was brave enough to leave, I mean, what's more stable than Walmart? Like, are they ever going to go anywhere? But she left and she doubled her salary. And that move, the fact that she had been valued at 90K, I tried to tell her when she was let go. I'm like, you don't have to go back to 50K because you've been valued at 90 now. So you can still negotiate from that space. And yeah, sure enough, that's what ended up happening for her. And I'm, again, really proud. But those are the two stories that stand out for me right now.
Well, come through, Dana. Come through, Ray.
Yes.
Taking the steps to push through that doubt, like you mentioned, to at least ask, at least have the conversation. Because really, at the end of the day, what's the worst that someone could say? No. Like either they can do it or they can't. Sometimes you know whether it's the situation or the type of organization that, has it. Like, I used to work at the county, and like the budget was the budget. So it was like there was only going to be X amount of a pay increase as a first year employee, and so on and so forth. And so I think one of the things is knowing like who are you working for, who are you working with, because there might be certain what's the word? Limits to what they can do. However, most corporate positions and corporations, they got money. Okay? That's why they're in business. So when you have the evidence, like you mentioned, you have the metrics that show this is how I'm having an impact here, then it hopefully helps someone go into that conversation with more courage. I think confidence is something that a lot of women say they want, but to me, confidence is really the byproduct of being courageous. And so I think that you can bolster and have more courageousness to say the words, can you, I'm looking for six figures, or whatever the amount is, to say the words out loud or to write it down, when you have those metrics to back you up, as opposed to just feeling like you have this arbitrary number that you're asking for. And I love that there's a strategy that you're walking these ladies through to be able to execute and just do an experiment. You know what I mean? And I bet sometimes ladies are surprised when they're working with you because you're just asking them to try something new. That they're surprised that they get 20% instead of the 15, and just going with whatever the organization is going to give you, and not making it personal. I think that that's something that I'm hearing come through from your own story. When you got laid off, you're like, oh, this isn't personal. Like, I don't have to be loyal to these people like they're my cousin or something like that. Like, this is work. I'm here to add value and hit certain objectives, and they see me as an employee. I can be replaced. Like, there is someone else that can do my position, and it's okay, so that you feel good to walk away if you need to. They feel like they can, do what they need to if they have to let you go or something. But for anyone that's listening, not to take it too personally. And even when you're having conversations around salary increase and different things, that it's not about them saying no because they hate you or something, or them saying no because you as a person are not valuable or something like that. I think that being able to separate those things is really key. And so I would like, as we're getting closer and closer to wrapping up, for you to maybe mention, do you also talk to ladies about other things that they can negotiate other than like dollars and cents increase? Are there other options or like other things that women might find attractive as far as benefits or something when it comes to negotiating? If a company's like, no, we can't do the money, we can't give you more money, what else can a woman advocate for?
Yeah, I think that remote work has obviously become a really key benefit for a lot of people. And I have seen people leave jobs because they were happy there, but they were going to be required to go back full time, in the office. So I think that you can ask for the flexible work schedule that you're needing. I just spoke to someone yesterday who had asked her company to go to a, for herself if she can go to a 4-day work week and keep her same pay. And they agreed. So that's something that you can also consider is like your time, and maybe it's additional vacation days up front that you can ask for instead of having to like accrue them slowly. One of the ways that I built wealth through my career was by negotiating sign-on bonuses and equity along the way. I know not every company offers equity, but a fair amount do. And you may work for a company that's publicly traded and you don't even know it. But even companies that aren't publicly traded, they may offer equity. So, you can ask for that. And equity is basically given in a couple different forms, but you get shares of the company and they get valued. And then over time, you can cash out those shares and it's on top of your base salary. And then you have sign-on bonuses, which are a lot more common than people think. I mean, during the pandemic, like FedEx and Pizza Hut were offering cash sign-on bonuses because that's how bad they needed drivers and, you know, delivery people. And especially if you're someone who's being poached, like you work for some place currently and they're coming to you and they want to take you away, they know they have to sweeten the deal for you. So a signing bonus is totally within reason to ask for. And I have a couple of freebies that we're going to talk about. One of them is the Just Quit Toolkit. And in the Just Quit Toolkit, I kind of break down like a reasonable expectation for how much of a bonus to ask for, a signing bonus to ask for, if you're starting from nothing. But if you have literal money on the table that you're leaving, if you were to leave your job, so for me, it was unvested 401k matches that I would have lost if I left, unvested equity that I hadn't had a chance to cash out yet. I would have left that on the table if I were to quit and join your firm. Then I'm going to tell you what the cash value of that was and ask you to make me whole. And you can do that in the form of a signing bonus or like a one-for-one swap. Like you give me the same amount of equity in your company stock. So there's for sure additional things you can ask. Another thing you can ask for is to pay for professional development, a fund that you can use to attend conferences. Or I've had people pay for Mandy Moneymakers through their professional development budget, you know, get them to pay for it like they would a conference. So how is that company going to invest in your learning and growth opportunities? And you can ask for that upfront as well. Those are the things that come top of mind and that I think can make a real difference when you're bargaining.
Again, this I'm an entrepreneur full time, y'all, but I swear I'd be thinking about getting a 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I'm
I do
like,
miss the bonuses. They were
yeah,
nice.
I sometimes it doesn't sound too bad, but there
Yeah.
are opportunities because I think that there's a kind of like a stigma or this idea that like entrepreneurship is like sexy and everyone should be an entrepreneur, and I'm like, no, like not everyone is meant to be an entrepreneur, and there are a lot of perks to working 9 to 5 that we really want to make sure that we're taking advantage of if that feels like it's the best option for you. And a lot of what you're mentioning is a lot of what those benefits are. And so I appreciate you for coming on the show and sharing because I don't think a lot of women have the spaces or places to have these conversations and ask these questions and learn about these types of things. And so, for you to have gone through it and lived it first, and now to be teaching other women how to do it, thank you for doing that work in the world. And I would love for you to talk more about like the Just Quit Toolkit and whatever other resources ladies can take advantage of, especially here as the year is wrapping up, to leverage, their skill set and abilities right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I recognize that for many workers right now, it's the time of year when you're about to have your year-end annual review, and maybe it happens in December, maybe it happens when you come back in January. But there's plenty of y'all who are probably wanting to figure out how do I finally ask for this raise that I've been wanting? And if you're someone who usually goes into reviews and hopes for a raise and you don't get one and you're kind of just like, okay, maybe next year. I came up with three, actually four. I just added a new fourth one. Four scripts that you can use to ask for a raise from your employer, either during your review, after your review, around the review time. Because again, we can't afford to wait for them to decide that we're ready. We have to be the squeaky wheel and ask. And so I love these scripts because they really do give you the words. You can put them in an email, you can read them verbatim, you know, through Zoom or on the phone or whatnot. But I'm definitely excited about that. You can pick up, well, I'll give you a link directly just sent to the ultimate year-end review scripts, but you can also go to mandymoney.com. It's Mandy with an I, / freebies to get my review scripts, and then the Just Quit Toolkit is there as well.
If y'all haven't already followed her on Instagram at Mandy Money, went to the website, got on the email list, get your free stuff. Like, if you haven't added Mandy to your universe, now is the time. I'm gonna give you the opportunity, okay? Make sure to click the link in the show notes because this is what I love about the internet. While there's like a lot of struggles with the internet and whatnot, I love that it helps us to connect with people that can share value. Like you've literally just given us like thousands and thousands of dollars of value. You know what I mean? Like someone can use what you're talking about right now and go and get a significant pay increase. And so I think being able to leverage the internet and podcasts and information that people are sharing for free just because they want to be able to see other people win is really important. And I'm speaking to anyone who's listening that wants to have a change happen in their life and they're not sure how or what or whatever the case may be. This is your sign, friend. Take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of you and the information that's right in front of you. And don't take it lightly to go and get on her email list and make sure that you download the script and then send her a DM if you enjoyed this podcast. Say, hey, thanks for sharing. Like, show appreciation, I think, also for the people that could otherwise be doing anything. I know personally, I got a 6-month-old. I think they're on a walk right now. Like, I'm about to be done with this podcast episode and go kiss on my baby. I could just choose not to share this podcast, but it's really important, I think, for us to be able to give back and share the information, the resources, the tools with those who want and need it. And so I think that as a podcast listener, your job is to, I'm gonna say, because I'm a teacher, y'all, I can't help myself, execute on something that resonates with you in a podcast episode. I don't want anyone listening to just listen and be like, oh, that was nice and whatever. No, what is it that you can do with this information? If you have a 9-to-5, do you need to spruce up your LinkedIn? Do you need to get this Just Quit toolkit? Do you need to do an annual review and get these scripts, start practicing them, send some emails out and whatnot to see what could happen and entertain an experiment? And so I say that because Mandy's gracious enough to come on the show and share this information. And I want to give you your flowers while you're here, but I also want people to be mobilized, not just motivated, to do something in their situation. And while the rest of the world looks bleak, baby, for us, it doesn't have to, okay? Because these corporations still have money to hand out during a season like this. And you still can have abundance and prosperity regardless of what's going on economically. I really believe that. And so I don't know where you want people to follow you specifically, where the best place is for them to make sure they're connected, but I say all of them. If you feel like she resonates, all of them, okay? Because you want to
follow my own advice. I'm really easy to find. If you can't find me, it's your fault. But I'm Mandy Money everywhere. Come and say hi. I'm pretty active on all social channels. And I can't wait to hear from y'all. But I agree. Get out there and do something, because, again, we can't afford to wait. Do one thing today that can help push the needle forward for yourself tomorrow. That's kind of my philosophy.
If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the podcast, you have a few options. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it, and you'll be notified as new episodes are uploaded. You can also leave a review or send me your feedback. Doing so helps me to create content that's relevant to what you want to hear about. And last, you can share the podcast with a friend. Whether it's directly or sharing it on your social media, it helps them to know that you think that this is information that they need to hear about. Thank you.